Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hello and welcome to Creation Animal Care at Red Oaks Dog Park in Madison Heights, Michigan. Our subject matter expert is Dr. Edie Hanna, veterinarian. Dr. Edie, I want to thank you for all of these programs. Our listeners are telling us how much they appreciate it. You've taken us to many places and taught us many things. What are we going to learn today?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for that intro, and I'm glad people are listening because I believe it's very important that they learn more about animals, not just dogs and cats, but as you know, we've encompassed other things. But today we are at the Madison Heights Red Oaks Dog Park. So Madison Heights is actually, you know, where I live, but I've been to this dog park, I think, once before, and I'm not sure exactly why I was here. I think it was with somebody else's dog, or to meet with somebody, a friend of mine. But other than that, we are at the Madison Heights Dog Park, Red Oaks, and I wanted to talk about the pros and cons of dog parks.
All right. Why don't we have a word of prayer? Would you lead us?
All right. Very good. Dear gracious Heavenly Father, thank you for the opportunity to, again, learn more about your creation. Lord, that these animals are under your care, under your watch as well, and we want to do what's best for them at all times, Lord. And I ask that you please guide us, that you please lead us and to how you want us to handle things, and that hopefully that we provide the education too. And thank you again for everything that you've done for us. I ask these things in Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Dr. Edie, I just began hearing about dog parks in the last few years. Tell us a little bit, what do you know about dog parks?
Well, there are pros and cons.
Okay.
We were just recently standing in front of a nice sign here that tells about...
There was a lot. It took almost the whole alphabet, too.
Yes, it is pretty huge. And I really wonder, I'm curious to see how many people actually will pay attention to those rules. And they should, because actually there are plenty of rules on the board there. Many dog parks should... I'm not saying they do, but they should have rules and regulations, because it's extremely important for the people to understand that there's not all dog parks are the same.
Okay.
The one we are at right now looks like two different sections. The one we just passed, and people need to know that we're walking while we're doing
that's
this, right?
That's right.
The one that we just passed is closed, and what I suspect is that they're trying to recoup some of the terrain on some of the grass that is
well worn.
Yes, it's worn down. And that's ideal for some dog parks, is that they have a couple of different sections and they give the sections a break so that the grass can regrow and the ground can be treated for possibly any parasites that might be in the dirt.
Because, oh man, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, you have to understand that dogs carry parasites, and if they are not properly treated, they are transmitting the parasites into the ground when I go to the bathroom. So then your dog comes along and plays in that same grassy area and can pick up that debris on their paws. They go to lick their paws, and then if they're not properly protected with a monthly preventative, then they can easily get worms.
Yeah, wow.
Roundworms, hookworms, Giardia.
So yeah. you think that in your experience that dogs that frequent the dog parks may have a higher risk factor?
Yeah, that's probably one of the cons that actually dog parks do carry. And as we are approaching dog run C here, so if that was A, there must be a B.
Yeah.
And now we have a C. But sometimes you know, right now we have, well, you tell the audience how many dogs you're seeing.
Okay, we're looking at dog run C. I see two, four, I see like five dogs, and it looks like there's owners, and it's kind of nice that they have picnic tables in this run.
They do, yes, yeah. So one of the pros of these dog parks, and any dog park actually, is it's a sense of community.
Okay.
People come together. They want to meet up. They think
for the dogs or for the
dog,
the animals.
You have to remember it's for both. It's actually for both. Because people meet up here, they get to know each other, and it's something that they can look forward to doing because it gets them out and gives them a sense of community, and they're participating, and, you know, the Madison Heights community. Some of these dogs, I'm sorry, like, how easily distracted we get. We have a guy who's rollerblading.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And then
dogs are chasing him.
We have three dogs that are literally on his tail between, like, there's a fence in between.
Right.
But they are definitely getting their exercise, are they not?
That's right. And this is in the near the run, and then there's one a little further behind that.
Yeah.
And
so I'm not sure how people pick and choose which one that they are going to, but I'm pretty sure it's probably going to depend on what their dog is like in behavior.
Okay.
Because some of these parks, we have to be very careful, and I think people need to be very, very sensible before they even bring their dog to a dog park.
Okay.
They really have to understand their dog's behavior. They have to understand, they have to look for clues and signs of whether or not they're even going to get along with another dog. This is not the place to come test it.
Okay.
Okay, it is definitely not the place to come test your dog to see if it's
going
to
get along. Try it in the neighborhood first?
Well, you should go to an actual trainer first. Some of those little training sessions that they do, group training sessions, or doggy daycares, those would probably be the best way to test your dog. And then they can work with you to see if it's ready for a dog park. So what I recommend is to test that out first. And because some of these dogs will get adopted when they're older, mm-hmm. and nobody really knows exactly if they're going to be dog friendly or not.
Right.
Okay. So again, it's not smart to come in and bring your recently adopted dog from the shelter or from somebody else to come into a dog park and just introduce them to whatever dogs you're here, because that's one of the cons of a dog park is that there's dog fighting.
Okay.
Okay. And it's very hard to break that up.
Dogs will be dogs.
Dogs will be dogs. And you know what? And it's not really always their fault either.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have to make sure that that is very clear. Sometimes these owners, they are not very responsible. They think that their dog is not going to hurt anybody. But what they don't realize is that their dog might not hurt anybody. But if there's another dog that's going to sense something in that dog, they're eventually going to show that in aggression. So... Hi there, sir.
Yeah, first time I brought her in here.
Oh,
this
really?
Is your first time?
No, first time I did.
Uh-huh. Oh, the first time.
She was a stray I found.
Okay.
I have her registered. She's legally mine.
Yes.
But I kept her on a leash the entire time.
Uh-huh.
I knew she'd be cool.
Are you okay being recorded? We're actually recording
that's fine.
A program.
That's fine.
So I'm going to actually do mine here, okay?
Sure.
All right, very good.
And you just tell us a little bit about what type of dog owner you are, and a long-time dog owner, or?
Yeah, I've had him for 15 years.
He's 15?
No, I've had dogs for 15 years.
Is your dog okay with beef?
Yes.
Okay. Good job.
No, but like she was saying, you have to be careful. Some owners aren't watching their dogs that closely. Or they kind of like themselves, like their dogs to be able to do whatever they want to do.
Yes.
So she's not a problem.
Explain your dog. What breed is it?
That's Rottweiler.
Okay.
Male, female?
Female.
Okay. What is her name?
Sally.
Sally. This is Sally.
Yeah.
How often do you bring Sally to the park?
Well, again, I found her 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
On 696 Service Drive.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was on Sunday. Tuesday, I called the city shelter, checked for a chip, no chip. Tried to find the owner, could never find the owner. So those first few months, I was here probably 6 days a week with her.
Okay.
So you then kept her, and then you started coming here. You knew nothing about her, so how did you then, did you walk the premises to see if she was...
First time in here, I kept the leash on her the entire time. Now, I could tell she would be cool, because I had a little pug at home and cats, and she was cool about it. But I just wanted to make sure I had control of her.
Yes.
Other dogs would come sniff around here, but she was good.
So we're talking about dog park etiquette.
Yes, that's true. So I think that this person handled everything very well. They found the dog that we were just discussing. They had no idea whether it's dog aggressive or not. And they were smart in the sense of having the proper leash, because this is a proper leash. What a retractable is not a proper leash, but this right here is a 6-foot leather leash. And it's allowing some control over the situation. And they walked the premises to see if the dog was going to be dog friendly, and tested it that way, and found out that everything's a good to go. Now this is one of the ones that was chasing the rollerblader of the
she's slow and lumbering. She's never ran as fast and as far as she did just then.
Really?
All the way down there. She can't run fast, but here she just did.
So. Give us a little, since you've been here several times, the average activity, does it is it seasonal?
Regular. There's regulars here. Probably during the spring, right about this time of day is when it's busiest.
Which is about 5:30.
6:30, yeah.
Is that like after work or something?
I guess so.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense.
So your dog's been indoors all day, you got to take you and the dog out.
Now that it's getting colder, there's going to be fewer and fewer people out, probably.
So let's talk about you personally. Have you made friends with the other owners that have come here?
I know the other owners.
You do? Okay.
I don't get into personal life so much, as much as just about the dogs.
Sure. Oh, wonderful.
Now, there looks like there's 3 runs here, correct?
Well, there's the 4th big one.
Okay.
Usually either that one is open or this one. Once in a while, though, like right now, they close one of them.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's 3 big ones and a small one for small dogs.
Are they indicated what size dogs, or do the owners kind of decide?
Yeah, these are all, the big ones are good for any size dog. The one for small dogs has a sign that says dogs 25 pounds or
good,
less.
I'm glad. I'm glad they have that designation, because honestly, there's a lot of little dogs that are fearful, and it's not always the big dog's fault. Like, so a little dog can come up and
provoke.
Sometimes actually they're more of the terrorizers.
That's right.
So I'm glad that they do have that distinction with small dogs and little and big dogs, but clearly we have no little dogs over there. So but thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that time.
I really appreciate it. And clearly she's having...
I think she just likes the attention.
She is now scratching her back on the cement.
This woman here, she's a regular here quite a bit. She's been coming here for years too. So.
And she's got 3 dogs.
Okay.
What breeds are those?
And then she just lets them go.
Some type of doodle.
Yes, this is probably a sheep-a-doodle. But again, I'm not huge on the combination names. But this is a poodle mix. So... but yeah, so it is interesting because as a veterinarian, I'm tensing up right now.
Are you?
I am tensing up very much. And part of
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And part of the reason is because this woman, who is apparently a regular, she is walking her other 2 dogs on a leash, lets the one go just anywhere, but it's not even an offense. It's not even part of being in the fenced in area. And I don't know. I'm a little nervous.
Okay.
I did not bring no first aid kit.
Okay.
And again, it looks like these dogs are pretty happy. So it is nice. But so sometimes, you know, what you just notice is that somebody else is trying to correct somebody else's dog, and then that dog was a little snappy. So you know, so it's a quite interesting situation. I don't think you're going to get this much live and in-person situations here. So,
well, it's just interesting. In the one we're here, it's predominantly male. We have 5 male owners
and one
female.
Yeah, yeah. And as you see, she just went over to the other side because she doesn't want to bring her medium-sized dogs into the big, large kennels. So,
okay.
Which is understandable. But honestly, I mean... If I wish people honestly too could, if they wanted to hang out at a dog park someday, especially ones that are busy, because there really is a lot of joy in watching some of these dogs. There's so much freedom that these dogs experience. And, you know, I'm watching the one right now. It looks like a pit mix, and it's super overweight.
Okay.
And it totally needs exercise. But it's so happy because when we first came here, it was rolling on its back, like, and it could barely move, but it's like a turtle with its legs stuck up in the air. But it was having so much fun. So to watch these dogs have the fun that they're having, enjoying other dogs. But I, again, as a veterinarian, I'm just so nervous because we have a Rottweiler, we have a German Shepherd, we have a Pit Mix, we have some large lab mixes, and another Shepherd mix. And then on the other side, there was the little Oodles that are mixed breeds over there. But yeah, so it can be scary.
Well, I'm so glad that we came out here and looked at this part of animal care.
Yeah, and again, if you are going to go to a dog park, please make sure you follow the rules. A lot of them will require that their dogs be licensed and up to date on vaccinations. They are not allowed to bring human or animal food because some of these dogs are actually food aggressive. So if you introduce a treat or something, if you notice outside this fence, okay, that I actually gave the dog a treat, because
right,
but I did ask the owner.
Right.
And so what happens is by doing so, I understand, you know, what the limitations are. And I also asked the owner too about whether or not it was allowed to have the beef. Okay.
Yes.
Because I have to be very sensible about that. I don't want to have to cause, you know, an allergic reaction. Okay.
Also, even when you're walking around the neighborhood, should you ask before you pet a dog?
Yes, absolutely. Because especially if you're with a child, because the children will go and just reach out without thinking because they don't know any better. And then if they get snapped at, I really don't blame the dog. I really don't. I usually blame the parent who's not watching their child. But I also will also blame the owner for not watching their dog too, if it's not on a leash, or if it's, you know, if the owner is talking on the phone while they're walking the dog and they're not paying attention to their surroundings and something whizzes up behind them, you know, a quick reaction from the dog, you can't blame the dog. The owner needs to be fully aware of their surroundings at all times. And back to the dog park real quick too.
Sure.
Not only is food not allowed, human or animal food, but you can't bring toys or balls or anything like that, because
I never thought of that.
Dogs, yes, they can be very possessive and they start fighting, and that's what can cause the danger. So and you shouldn't bring a dog to the park if they're sick, if they're not feeling good, if there's been any recent like vomiting or diarrhea. And you have to be responsible in picking up after your pet as well. And pretty much any dog park is going to have the proper cleanup. So you have
the
dog
bags.
Waste. Yes, they have the dog waste bags. And then also to make sure that you are bringing water for your dog. You don't really want to do a community water thing because that can introduce diseases as well into the water. Giardia is a parasite that's found in water, and if one dog is carrying Giardia and your dog comes along and drinks that same water, you're just passing off. And I tell you, Giardia is not the easiest to kill,
and
it's transmissible to humans.
That's very serious. Dogs like to share their water?
It depends. I mean, it's not, if they're thirsty, they're thirsty. You know, like right now, we're watching the gentleman actually give water to his dog, and there's another one right next to it.
Right.
They're literally drinking out of the same, like, container, and they're not having any issues, and those dogs are definitely not from the same household, because we know that we just talked to
right,
the one owner, and then I watched the other owner come in with their other dog. But you know, again, they're probably more apt to drinking the same water than they are to take food. Because I think if they're more food aggressive, then they're going to show the fight. But please, if you are going to go to a dog park, make sure you're understanding of all the scenarios. There are pros and cons, and you really want to be knowledgeable and protect your pet, and making sure that you know. I know you love your dog by taking them here, but sometimes it's really just not the best place. But if you live in an apartment and you need a place to run your dog, I think dog parks can come in very handy, and it's an appropriate place as long as, you know, you're following the rules.
Very good. Well, Dr. Edie, thank you so much for bringing us out and talking about this. In our next session, we're going to go over questions and answers that our listeners have, and our typical frequently asked questions.
Yes. Yep. It'll be a wide range, and things that we received from the camp meeting audience from before, and we just never got a chance. All right.
Very good. We'll be right back after this break. Bye now.
When you're taking a trip, it's important to stay on the right road and to follow the GPS or roadmap to be sure that you get to your destination. Likewise, on your trip to heaven, it is vital to follow the roadmap, the Bible, God's positioning system. To do that, stay with Strong Tower Radio as we uplift the Bible and proclaim God's character. If you'd like to help with this mission, go to our secure website, www.strongtowerradio.org, and click on the donate button, or call 231-468-2087. We thank you, and may God bless you as we proclaim God's character together.
This is Creation Animal Care, Tom Mazure with Dr. A.D. Hanna, and we're at the Red Oaks Dog Park in Madison Heights, Michigan, and we just came in from a very chilly 51 or 50 degrees out there, but they say the wind chill is 43. We're glad to get out of the weather here with a little bit of shelter. Dr. Edie, we're going to do a few questions that we had left over from camp meeting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, we sure are. And we are sitting in my car. And is it truly much better than being outside? I'm not sure. Well, I drive a lot, so I have things for everybody and everything. So,
well, let's start with this question. Is it true that a lizard can regrow body parts?
Can a lizard regrow body parts? Actually, that is very true. So they usually sometimes can regrow their tails, but not so much their limbs. Their tails, you know, the regrown tail is usually a different structure from the original, but I don't know if you recall that there are some, because lizards are prey, what happens is if they're trying to escape a predator and that predator grows to grab their tail, then they can separate that tail.
It's so sacrificial.
Yep, it is sacrificial, and they can regenerate that. So, there's the axolotls, which are like little amphibians. They are not reptiles. They can regrow actually their entire limbs. So it does, it can happen. And just remember, you know, we can regrow some of our liver, right?
That's
so
true.
Why can't a lizard regrow its tail then? So, but yeah, it's usually a defense mechanism. They release their tail and then they can regrow it. But of course, not all lizards can. Okay, so just keep that in mind.
How about this one? Why can't my dog have chocolate?
That is a perfect question, especially for the fact today is October 31st. We're allowed to mention dates, right? Okay. All right. Well, it is October 31st, and we know that this time of year, and even, you know, through the winter, that there is going to be a high risk of chocolate intake. And, yeah, your dog should not, under any circumstances, have chocolate. And the reason is because that chocolate contains something called theobromine and caffeine, and dogs cannot metabolize that product. Okay, so, and what can happen is it can affect their nervous and cardiovascular systems, or their heart, and darker chocolate is even more toxic.
Is it possibly fatal?
Yes, it can totally kill your dog. Mm. So it is extremely important that you are very well aware of where all your candy is, your chocolate candy, and chocolate products, whether it's cupcakes or what have you, in your house. Because if your dog does get into it, it can cause death. And I did one time when I had my dog, somehow, some way, she had gotten into some chocolate brittle of some sort, and I had come from downstairs, and I don't even know how I noticed. I think I saw a wrapper, and I'm like, uh-oh. And I took her outside, and I gave her a decent amount of hydrogen peroxide. It's supposed to be like a tablespoon or so initially to get your dog to vomit, only if Now, please seek a veterinarian's, you know, I know I'm a veterinarian and you should, you know, I'm giving you advice, but this has to be within 15 minutes of you noticing that it ate chocolate.
Before it gets fully ingested.
Yes. So giving your dog a tablespoon of hydrogen peroxide, which is what I did for my dog. And I made her swallow that, and I waited a few minutes. And if nothing happens, you give them another tablespoon of hydrogen peroxide, and you wait a few minutes. But anyway, when I did this for my dog, she puked up so much chocolate and the tin foil, whatever that was wrapped in. And I could smell chocolate for days. Mm. It was so gross. And you think it would turn me against chocolate, but no, that nothing ever turns me against chocolate. But that's how serious, like if that would have settled in her stomach, I have a feeling she would have had to be hospitalized. So I'm glad that I was able to know what I was doing and cause her to vomit. But chocolate is very serious. Don't even sneak a little piece, because if they get that taste, then, I mean, of course, a little bit is not going to hurt them. However, it does depend on the size of the dog, too.
That was my next question.
Yeah, so if your little chihuahua gets into, you know, a Hershey's Kiss, honestly, that could cause some issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if your German Shepherd, you know, gets into that little Hershey's Kiss, it's not going to be a huge deal, okay? But yes, dogs should not have chocolate, so please be fully aware of how serious that is.
What about feeding table food? I think we've talked about that in past programs.
Yes, we have, because it, your dog is allowed to have proper fruits and vegetables, and there are lists online of what they are allowed to have. So there are things that they cannot have. Like, of course, they can't really have macadamia nuts, and it's because of whatever it contains as a chemical or what have you. But there are certain things they can and cannot have. Of course, they can't have grapes. They cannot have onions, things like that. It's because of what it can cause in toxicity. Whatever they carry, it affects your dog and can cause death. So, or severe sickness. So, but table scraps to a certain extent, you know, fruits and vegetables, yeah, not a problem, as long as it's appropriate, the appropriate kind. But
without the few exceptions.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to give them the fat off of your steak if that's what you eat, which I'm not sure you should. But, you know, you can give them, you know, your cooked carrot or something like that. But, I mean, let's be reasonable here in the sense of course, they're, you know, of course it's okay to feed them proper foods, and sometimes it's even better than the actual dry dog food that they're getting. But you have to do everything in the right proportion. I would be in favor of giving your dog, you know, raw food in the sense of raw vegetables and things like that, or cooking your own, you know, your own food, as long as you have the proper nutrients and minerals that you're making, you know, up for that. But again, you should just be very careful. So, and make sure, you know, people in the household are not just feeding anything either. Like, don't, you know, what makes us overweight can make them overweight as well. Mm. So just be forewarned. So, remember, every pound on them is 10 pounds on us.
Oh, wow.
So,
you know, feeding the dog under the table is pretty much a no-no?
Yeah, first of all, it's not, you know, it's not very nice to when you have a company over and then your dog is underneath somebody else's feet waiting for table scraps. I think that's pretty rude.
So you're habituating.
So I think that you need a properly behaved dog. And if you want to wait until your meal is over and have, you know, a separate area where you can pick and choose, you know, if you want to, you didn't finish your green beans and you want to give them to your dog. Sure, that's great. But if those are caked in seasonings and oils, it's probably not a good idea. Oh. So, and people don't understand, pancreatitis, which is inflammation of your pancreas, if your dog gets that, it could be hospitalized, it could affect them for the rest of their life, or it could kill them.
Mm,
so,
wow.
You got to be careful.
Let's talk about treating fleas, ticks, and worms without chemicals. Is there an alternative?
Oh, this is huge for me. I get a lot of clients that will come in and say they are treating, and their pet does have fleas, and they'll say, well, but I'm treating with diatomaceous earth. And then I, you know, put my head in my hands and just shake my head, because although I am a huge proponent of natural remedies, when it comes to parasites, fleas, ticks, worms, there aren't any natural remedies that are going to solve the whole entire problem. Okay.
So, and if you miss, it could be very disastrous for the animal.
Yes, it could be, because parasites are parasites. They're called parasites for a reason. They absorb nutrients from the body of your animal, and they can cause severe health issues, sometimes even death. You know, fleas can cause anemia, and we know that fleas, you know, in a long time ago, and actually even now, I think there was a case not too long ago in some other state, but the bubonic plague. So you have to be careful with that, because that is called the Black Death. But excessive amount of fleas can cause some serious health issues. It can cause tapeworm. And then you have ticks that will also feed off of the blood and can infect diseases into your pet, and can eventually cause death as well. But it's not just your pet. These are the same things that can cause health issues in you as well. So when it comes to treating fleas and ticks and worms, stop with the whole natural stuff. You have to get them on a chemical. And the best thing to do, especially for your dog, is to get them on a monthly heartworm preventative. So it's covering a wide variety of things. And if you need two separate products, like one's a flea and tick control and the other one's the heartworm preventative that covers other intestinal parasites, then please do so. But don't give me the whole natural remedies thing. Peppermint oil, tea tree oil, no. Okay, just no. Do what is proper for your pet. And if that means that you have to give your pet a chemical every month, then so be it. I mean, I could go through people's houses and pick out and choose all the chemicals they put in their body. So putting your dog on heartworm preventative or flea and tick preventative every single month is not a bad thing. And people need to stop thinking that it is.
Okay.
And that goes for your cat too. There are preventatives out there that you should be giving your cat as well, because cats, especially for flea issues, if they have fleas, they do get tapeworm. And when they get tapeworm, it can cause some significant health issues as well. So please stop with the natural remedies for fleas and ticks and worms, because it's just not going to be feasible, and it's not going to be sustainable. Please get the chemical, because that is really the best thing for your pet. This was a sinful world. That's what we have to deal with, but it is overall best for your pet.
Here's another question. Dog is scooting or licking its rear end. Is this a sign of worms?
Nope, not always. It could be other things. There could be something called an anal gland issue. Are you familiar with anal glands?
I'm sorry, I don't.
Well, you're probably glad that you don't, but dogs and cats have something called anal glands, or anal sacs, that are around their perianal area, their rectal area. And what happens is that usually the natural way is that when they go to the bathroom, when they defecate, they express those glands, which are scent, it's a form of scent glands. They express those glands naturally as they go to the bathroom, so they're able to express them on their own without issue. And they're stinky, okay? It can be very stinky. It's like it's a scent gland that gives them a marking of their territory, kind of thing.
It leaves other scents.
Yeah. And it's and those are similar to what skunks spray. But skunks have an extreme pungent odor. If you have not smelled that, good for you. But if you have, then you understand what I'm saying. But dogs and cats do have anal glands. And sometimes if they are not getting the proper diet or there's an underlying health issue, those anal glands can become impacted, and they're not able to express themselves properly. So they start licking back there because it's uncomfortable. And they start scooting because they're itchy and it's irritating them. And sometimes those have to be manually expressed. Usually most people would take them to the vet or the groomer and have them do that. But I've expressed to many, and let me tell you, be careful, because that smell is horrid, and you really want, if you get it on yourself, you really want to make sure you wash up pretty quickly, just because it stinks so bad. But not always is it worms. It could be an anal gland issue, and I can tell you this, a male dog who has an anal gland abscess, it's not neutered, it can develop into a tumor, and therefore the best thing to do is to get your dog neutered, your male dog neutered, so that it doesn't develop an anal gland tumor. So,
does the anal gland have some function?
Mostly just a scent, okay. A scent gland. So that is just to
identify.
It's a communication, a mechanism as other dogs or cats
Absolutely.
Coming by. So
let me run one dog question, then we might go to other species here.
Okay.
My dog is getting a lump on his body. What is it? Another somewhat vague question.
Yeah.
Depends on where it's at?
Not only does it depend on where it's at, it depends on what it looks like, it depends on how it feels, it depends on when it popped up.
It feels to you or to the dog?
Well, probably to the person itself. Like, I would ask, if this was an over-the-phone question.
Is it kind of squishy or
yes,
is it hard?
I would ask them to give me descriptions of what it looks like, how does it feel, where is it located. A size, I will ask them to compare it to a size.
And maybe how much it's grown, how fast. Or...
Mm-hmm. All of those questions are going to be asked because we have to figure it out. Now, these lumps sometimes have to be seen in person. So what most veterinarians might do is if it's significant enough, depending on the lump, and it is going to depend on the lump because not all of them should be poked at and aspirated. And aspirated just means taking a needle and poking at that little lump and drawing up some cells into the needle and then spraying it on a microscope slide so that you can look underneath a microscope to see what those cells are. And there are sometimes ways to determine if there are cancer cells in those lumps. Not always, but it is a possibility depending on the lump. And anyway, so that's called like a smear of the lump tissue cells. So, but you really should see your veterinarian. You should monitor for growth. You should, again, think in your head, you know, what did my pet do recently that might have caused, like, do I remember it, you know, seeing it in a fight? Do I remember that the cat might have scratched its, you know, the
maybe
its
had
nail.
Got a thorn or
yep.
thistle or something.
If it went through some brush, if, you know, it got into something or fell off of something, like all of these little things will play in my head to ask the owner, you know, and when did they notice it? You know, if I see this lump, you know, if they finally bring it to me and I see the lump, and I'm like, when did you notice it? And they say, oh, I just noticed it like last week. And this lump is the size of a baseball. That's very odd.
Yes.
So they either A, have not been paying attention to their dog, or this is a serious lump that really just popped up within a couple of days.
Wow.
So, which is very rare. But it could be. I mean, it could be an abscess. It could be a basic abscess, too.
And it could grow pretty quickly.
So, yes. Yeah, sometimes an abscess can go pretty quickly. And then what you do is you shave it, you lance it, and then hopefully it's something that's very easily treatable. So,
very good. Well, you're listening to Creation Animal Care with Dr. Edie Hannah, and we'll be back after this break.
Hello, friends. JB here. Won't you help us at Strong Tower Radio spread the news about God's true character, about His love and concern for the human race, about the free gift of salvation that Jesus offers? If you'd like to help spread the word through Strong Tower Radio, why not go to our secure website, that's www.strongtowerradio.org, and click on the donate button. There you'll find all the information you need to become a regular monthly giver or weekly giver to the cause of Jesus. If you're not an internet person, you can always call us at 231-468-2087 and just tell them that you want to help support God's cause through Strong Tower Radio. Thank you for listening to, praying for, and supporting Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is changing lives one listener at a time.
This is Creation Animal Care with Dr. Edie Hanna. Our first segment, we were at an animal park in Madison Heights, Michigan. That's southeast Michigan. We talked to a dog owner and shared etiquette and the do's and don'ts of dog parks, when you should do things and when you shouldn't do things.
Oh.
That's right.
All right.
On to the next question. How much work will it take to care for a snake?
Ah, snakes. Okay. Well, I don't know a ton. Okay. So, but like anything else, no matter what animal it is, you must do your research.
Do snakes, we had a program about exotics. Do snakes fall under exotics?
Yes, they do. Mm-hmm. Yep. And there are some snakes you're allowed to have and some snakes you're not allowed to have. But for the most part, generally, they're considered low maintenance.
Okay.
And I mean, I find that kind of interesting for sure. But your corn snakes, I think your ball pythons are low maintenance.
You give them a mouse or rat and that takes care of it?
No, I mean, you have to, you know, it is very, their diets have to be very specific. And there are times where, you know, snakes generally low maintenance, but you have to be careful with their feeding because you can't overfeed them. They have to be very specific. Some of them don't have to eat for like a couple of days. Wouldn't it be nice to not eat but you have to have the proper environment. You have to have the proper cage space or aquarium space or however, you know, they're set up. Snakes can grow. Okay. I don't know if you've known some stories where somebody gets a python or a ball python and they just let it roam the house. Well, if you let it roam the, like, slither around the house, they do grow. Mm-hmm. Okay. They might grow so excessively that you don't know what to do with it anymore. So you think it's okay, especially in Florida, just to let those things go. Not a good idea. Okay, so you have to know your research. They have to have the proper temperature, the proper just overall care. You have to understand that they have to shed. They have to have certain...
Do you have to assist them while they're shedding?
I think there are some cases where you do have to assist them, but that's if they're also, too, if they're not having the proper nutrition and if they're not having the proper... enrichment, meaning they have to have certain substrates, which is, you know, like rocks or what have you, so they can utilize those things. So
to kind of scrub it or to remove it.
Yeah, and it really is. So just like for anything, you have to do your research. But oddly enough, they're generally considered low maintenance. So if you think that's for you, that's great. I can tell you that I would not be allowed in my house if I wanted a snake. I'd have to go live on my own.
Is it necessary to chip your pet? And can I track my pet because it has one? It's been chipped.
Okay. So is it necessary? I mean, nobody's forcing you to microchip your pet. But there are recommendations, especially if you're traveling, you really should have your pet microchipped. Microchips have saved lives, and I am all for microchipping. I think microchipping is very important. What it is, typically, it's a little piece of plastic. It's like a grain of rice that gets injected into between the fatty part of the shoulder blades. And typically, if your pet gets lost or separated from you somehow, some way, you take that pet to a police station, an animal control officer, or a veterinary clinic or humane society. They scan your pet, hopefully head to toe, because those actually can migrate a little bit. But they're supposed to scan it, and then it traces a number back to you. As long as you have that chip registered to you, you have to do your part. It's not a GPS. I do believe that they have those out there now, but which is a tracker, but a microchip is not a tracker where you can just go online and see where your pet is. A microchip is just something that is very important to have. It has saved lives. It has reunited pets with their owners. So yeah, I think they're very important. And I think they really should be required. in many aspects, but I've seen the benefits. We've actually returned pets back to their owners through the microchip, and it is a joy. It's sad for one person, because if a person found that pet and they got attached to it and they thought they were going to keep it, and we go to scan it, and then we're like, sorry, it belongs to somebody. And then we trace the owner, and they're like, oh my goodness, I've been looking, you know, for my pet. And, you know, so it's bittersweet sometimes, but honestly, they're great to have. And if you do transfer if your pet does have a microchip and you're rehoming it, just make sure you tell the new owner to please register that pet under their name.
It's interesting. In the first segment here at the dog park, we talked to an owner, and they had it scanned to see if it had been chipped. If it had been, they might have been able to return it to the owner.
Yeah, that was a smart thing to do. That was a very smart thing to do. But he lucked out, and it looks like he got a very good dog.
Yes.
So that's great.
Now we're turning to birds. Should I have one or two birds? And tell us why we would want to have two birds. Or four birds.
You can have as many birds as you think is going to make you happy. No.
Does it matter on the species?
Yes, I do believe it does matter, because some birds, you know, probably don't get along with others. But I believe that it is best to have two birds. Okay, so I think two birds are definitely going to keep them each other company. So two birds would be ideal. And it depends on multiple factors, though. You have to understand what it takes in the matter of time, the species, the birds' personalities, the space that you have, the cost it's going to take. I mean, these are all aspects, you know, no different than the snake. You have to do your research. I remember, I think when I was little, I think we had a bird, but I think our house was too cold, and I think it died. I think its name was Skippy. But it was a little parakeet, mm-hmm. those little green parakeets. But yeah, you have to understand exactly, you know, what it is your purpose of having these. Pairs, for the most part, I think are always best, just like it's good for kittens when you adopt a kitten. Pairs are always best, but I think for birds too, I think pairs are always good because they have company. But there are some birds that it's just maybe just best to leave them as separate. But you do have to spend some time with them, because you know what? What's the purpose? What, just because it looks pretty, you want to just sit and not all birds sing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and not all birds talk. If you get those ones that are talk, that's great. Just make sure you teach it Bible verses. Okay.
And you might get tired of it talking.
Yeah. But I tell you what, if I could have it recite the Bible, what a gift that would be.
There you go. When should I get my pets spayed or neutered, and why should I have it done?
I love questions like this, because this is my life that I live every day, 6 days a week. Well, you should have your pets spayed or neutered. Typically, you want to have it done between the ages of 4 and 6 months. You will hear differing things out there, especially when it comes to certain breeds, the larger breeds. I am of the type that wants to say you can also spay and neuter by a year of age for the large breeds. You will hear other people say wait 2 years. And let me tell you why. They say that the reason why you want the larger breeds to wait closer to 2 years is because it takes that long for the bones to grow, for growth hormone and all that to take fully in place for an adult. Although that might be true, I'm not saying it's not, but when you have researchers who are taking 100 golden retrievers and they're saying that that there's an increase in cancer because they spayed or neutered early in life compared to later in life, I question those studies. And the reason why I question those studies is because they're only literally taking in one factor. They are taking in, was your pet spayed or neutered? At what age? say the dog was diagnosed with cancer, and then they find out of 100, 60 got cancer, 60 had cancer, and they all of a sudden, it's because many of those were spayed or neutered less than a year of age. Well, here's the thing. What I want to know is I want to know what kind of food these dogs were fed. I want to know what kind of home environment these dogs were in. I want to know what kind of what chemicals they were given on a regular basis, you know, whether it's a medicine that they were on for something else. I want to know their surroundings, because don't you think that a dog who's living around a nuclear plant is going to have more of a risk of having cancer than it is for living in the country? I want to also know what kind of water is being fed, like well water versus tap water.
So it's definitely not a controlled study.
It is not a properly controlled study. But I think that typically most dog sizes should be spayed between 4 and 6 months of age, spayed and neutered, because you can eliminate a lot of health issues by doing so, especially in the females. And for the males, you can eliminate several behavioral issues. So I'm a huge proponent of spaying and neutering. I do it all the time. And as for a cat, it really should be by 6 months. But yeah, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it because I deal with this every single day for 6 days a week. And I can't tell you that these animals are waiting way too long to be fixed, and it's causing some health issues. And I'd rather see them spayed or neutered early on, because you cannot prove to me that spaying and neutering early in life is causing all these health issues later in life, especially with the world that we live in. There's too many other factors that can easily cause health issues, not spaying and neutering early. So that's where I stand with that.
Very good. We're going to move on to alligators and crocodiles. And the age-old question, what is the difference?
The difference between an alligator and a crocodile? Well, first of all, I love alligators, Tom.
You don't know?
Yes. And I don't know. I'll have to share a story with you sometime other than right now. But I lured an alligator to me in Florida in the wild. And it was one of the best days of my life. And I am still alive today because of it. And I have pictures too, but I'll have to tell the audience that some other time. But first of all, alligators. Let's talk about some of their appearance. Do you know? Can you tell me what do you know?
The crocodiles are saltwater related. They aren't here in the U.S. Maybe, and the alligators are domestic or not domestic, but they're to the United States, but probably other parts of the world too.
Yeah, but you know what? There are some crocodiles that can live in some fresh water, believe it or not. So, but yeah, alligators, fresh water, crocodiles, usually salt water. Okay, so, and then their appearance, you have to look at their appearance as well. If you look at their snouts, you have usually the alligator has like a U-shaped snout, whereas the
bigger radius.
Yes, and the crocodile will have a very narrow V-shape. So it's very, very much more narrow. I mean, they're clearly very obvious. When their mouths are closed, the alligator will have its top teeth more visible. Mm-hmm. And then the crocodile, its lower teeth will be visible, especially the fourth tooth. Now, I'm not sure if you're going to be standing next to that crocodile very much and counting teeth. I don't really suggest that. Otherwise, you'll be missing a few fingers or a full arm. But usually alligators are smaller, maybe 13 to 15 feet, and whereas crocodiles can reach up to 20 feet. Okay. And crocodiles are in personality and behavior, they're a bit more aggressive.
That's what my guess would have been.
Yes. Alligators are a little bit more passive and less aggressive, but yeah, there are definitely some physical and behavioral differences. But again, do you want to get close enough to determine whether or not you're facing an alligator or crocodile? I probably wouldn't, but yeah, I learned to love them while watching, Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter. I really enjoyed watching him. His love for animals really sets apart a lot for how I proceed with things. I think that what he did for alligators and crocodiles was huge, because he brought a different level of respect for them. And but anyway, I appreciated him for doing that, and that's how I learned to actually really like alligators and crocodiles. And I would not own one, but I tell you what, if I did, I'd be so happy. So, but I would have to have the property and the setup. That would be perfect. But
alligator or crocodile?
Alligator. Okay. Yeah. Actually, I just did a home. I did a home visit a few months ago, and I did rabies vaccines on like several dogs. But he actually had an alligator in his house, and he had it set up in a big wooden structure with water pond set up. It was not a bad setup, and it was a smaller alligator, but, you know, he was very proud. I'm not sure he was allowed to have that, but you know what? It is what it is. But I tell you what, I was happy that day because that thing was pretty cool. So.
All right. What about how often should I bathe my pet? Is that cat-dog specific?
Not really. I mean, once a month is pretty ideal. Only if you want to, because honestly, I think I've bathed my cat in the past 4 or 5 years, I think maybe once. Okay. So she actually keeps herself very clean. A lot of cats will keep themselves very clean because they have these spines on their tongue that will, help groom themselves. So, and for dogs, honestly, once a month would be okay if your dog is known to get excessively dirty. In the summer, when you have a bunch of pond swimmers and lake swimmers, it's fine, but sometimes they do smell and they do have crud on them. So you probably want to get that off with a simple, shampoo instead of, you know, chemically laden. But, and it also depends too on skin issues. If your dog has skin issues, sometimes you have to bathe it with a medical shampoo, with benzoyl peroxide so that you can help with some of the skin diseases that are out there. So it depends, but.
I have a question comes to mind. Mm-hmm. You mentioned about in the summer and they're into water. Do you wash a pet more frequently because they've been bathing in the water or less frequently? Or it depends on the water source.
Yeah, it is going to depend on the water source. But you have to remember, too, the more bathing you do, especially with shampoos, you can dry out their skin and actually make it worse. Because it's going to strip the oils.
Mm-hmm.
So you just got to be careful. And also, you know, it's still going to be helpful feeding it proper nutrition. So make sure that is on target as well. But it is going to depend. You know, if the dog is or the dog or cat is getting excessively dirty, has parasites and things like that, you're going to want to clean it a little bit more often originally. But you do have to back off because otherwise the skin is not going to become healthy over time.
Some people have more sensitivity, humans, to sodium lauryl sulfate. Is that the same issue with dogs? Does that chemical, it dries out human skin a lot?
Yeah, I mean, any shampoo. We like to use, we do talk about Dawn dish soap. Dawn dish soap is very ideal for animals with fleas. Initially, you want to treat, you know, you can bathe your pet with Dawn dish soap. It will kill the live fleas. It is only a temporary fix, but you can't continuously use that or it will cause problems with the dog's or cat's skin.
Well, we've had touched on a lot of subjects here. We started the program here at the dog park and continued some of the questions. There's always questions about animal care.
I know. We only touched, what, on like three? I feel like we only did three, but we have a bucket full here.
That's right. Well, maybe for another day.
Maybe for another day.
For Strong Tower Radio Network, I'm Tom Mazur, and this is Dr. Edie Hanna. Until next time, God bless.
God bless. Send your questions in.
Bye now.
Bye.